Welcome to our CyberWise Chats, where we talk about the challenges of raising and teaching digital kids. I'm Diana Graber, author of Raising Humans in a Digital World and founder of CyberWise and CyberCivics. Join every episode with Dr. Pamela Rutledge, who's the director of the Media Psychology Research Center. Our always lively conversations tackle topics like cyberbullying, screen time, TikTok, and everything in between. We've got some great guests and promise each chat will give you the tips, tricks, and confidence you need to help kids use technology safely and wisely. All right. Well, welcome everyone. And thanks for joining us today for today's CyberWise chat, whether you're here on the webinar or listening to us via the podcast. I'm Diana Graber. I'm the founder of CyberWise and CyberCivics and also the author of Raising Humans in a Digital World. Here as always with Dr. Pamela Rutledge, who is the director of the Media Psychology Research Center, and CJ Lindsay, our resident kids media expert, who is also the producer of the Parents Guide to What Kids Watch podcast. If you have not listened to that and you have kids that watch anything, you definitely need to tune in to that podcast. All right, but today we're going to be talking about building a resilient kid, what parents need to know. So while this is not one of our most salacious or clickbaity topics, it may be the most important one we've done yet. Over the last couple of years, if you've followed us, we've covered like really meaty topics like sextortion and cancel culture, online pornography, and more. These are things that keep parents up at night. But as we were preparing for this, Pam made such a good point that I want to share with you. While any of the topics I just mentioned might happen to your kids, they are not a certainty by any measure. But what is a certainty is your kids are going to meet online challenges in their lives, and they're going to meet offline challenges in their lives. And it is a certainty that one thing will help them, and that's being resilient. It will help them every single time. So we'll be explaining this and why, but most importantly, stay with us towards the end because we'll be giving you tangible examples that you can do to help your kids build this super important skill. So before we get started, Pam, I'm going to turn to you to have you explain what is resilience.
Well, resilience is really defined as the ability to bounce back from difficult things. And the research started back in the 1970s when researchers were really interested in why some kids in really terrible situations would do very well and other kids would not. And so that's when they started breaking this apart. It's much more helpful, I think of resilience as an internal strength than just the ability to bounce back from bad things, because that strength allows you to change how you think about yourself and the environment. So, you know, we do all kinds of things to protect our kids. We make them brush their teeth every night. That takes practice. Building resilience is not a personality trait. It is something you learn. It is something you build. You can practice with your child and become more resilient yourself. But it is something that you can build, and it's one of the most important determinants of success in life.
You know, and I was thinking that practice, I'm going to jump in before I go to UCJ, is, you know, it's pretty easy to practice this stuff in the real life because as parents, we lived in the real world, right? It's harder for parents to practice this online because first of all, we're not there with our kids in the places they are online. And secondly, we did not grow up with the online world, largely most of us, a lot of us. So it makes it a lot more tricky. And that's why we want to talk about building resilience offline first. But CJ, I'm going to turn to you because you do so much programming and work so much with programming for kids. Why is resilience important for them to have even when they're so young and watching things with their parents?
Well, it kind of goes back to what Pam was saying, which is you can try and avoid things as much as you possibly can. But your kids will end up seeing things or watching things that, you know, you may not want them to or inappropriate for their age. There was recently I had an experience with, there was a congressman who posted about how angry he was that his small daughter saw a trailer for an adult cartoon. So it's a cartoon. So the kid is interested in it and it's really flashy. But the trailer was for a show called Little Demon, which has its own, you know, connotations with it. And he was really, really upset that he couldn't turn it off fast enough. He couldn't get to the TV fast enough. So he was like mad at the trailer. That's probably not an unfamiliar situation to a lot of people, where if you can help teach your kids that they will feel things and they will see things that they don't plan to, but how to work through the emotions that that content brings up. That's where resilience is key in media.
Yeah, I have a great example story about that as well. Years ago, I attended a conference and somebody from the FCC, pretty high up guy in the FCC, was making a presentation. And he was married to a woman who was Asian, and his 8-year-old daughter was just curious about that. So she went to the internet and Googled Asian women. You can imagine what popped up, right? So I thought, you know, even for people in the industry that should be so smart, these things happen. And so preparing our kids for all kinds of experiences in their life is so important.
Well, let me just add on that, because the things that happen in life that might be big challenges to kids might not seem big challenges to us. Maybe, you know, there's some life changes. You move, they get a new teacher, their best friend moves away. Particularly during COVID, kids have been very reactive to being isolated socially and not being able to take school, you know, in person. And there's been a lot of loss during COVID. You know, people lost their job, people have lost family members, some very difficult things. So resilience is really all about those things. But I think there's one really important distinction between that and what you all are talking about, which is super important, is that digital resilience means you're prepared to be resilient in an online space. And it's the same set of skills as resilience, plus a little bit more.
Yeah. And the word that really pops out to me, and it's in our notes, all over our notes, is this whole idea of self-efficacy. And I think that's really getting lost today. There's so much legislation trying to happen to regulate all the internet, you know, all the providers. And there's so much talk about, you know, online safety, blah, blah, blah. And we don't think about preparing kids to be self-reliant or having resiliency or self-efficacy. Like, what do you do when you encounter this situation online? Like, we don't practice that enough with our kids. So I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here, because we'll talk about that a lot more in a minute. But I do want to kind of take a step back, because, you know, you've probably seen the research coming out from Pew and all that. Kids, like, number one thing kids do is watch YouTube, right after that TikTok. So video streaming stuff, it's huge for kids, and it starts very, very young. CJ, you're in the midst of this. So give us some examples of how and what's out there that kids can possibly be learning the skill of resiliency from.
Yeah, it's really about making sure that you seize the opportunity that media kind of presents. In kind of preparing for this, I was afraid that what I'm about to say may come across like, hey, you know, let entertainment media do the work for you. And that's it's all about the opportunity that media presents to help teach your kid kind of these skills that emotional resilience can kind of stem from. So it's kind of all over the place. These opportunities that this media presents are all over. And, you know, luckily we are not at a place where all values and, you know, positive things have gone out of kids' entertainment. They're in there. Almost every television show has a lesson that they're trying to teach. Whether you agree or disagree, they are trying to teach something. I will throw out a few examples of kind of opportunities that I have kind of seized with my nieces and nephews in watching kind of shows with them. So Monsters at Work on Disney Plus, is the whole TV show starts with the main character kind of getting a crushing disappointment. He had a job lined up. He was excited. He was leaving college. And then everything changed and he didn't get anything that he wanted. And he ended up in a completely different place. This is an opportunity to walk with your kids through those feelings of disappointment and how to work through it and come out the other side in a way that kind of benefits you and is positive. Steven Universe on HBO Max is a great example. Steven Universe is really bad at something. He's like trying to be kind of a superhero, but he's really bad at it. And it's a really long show. And so you get to go with him as he gets better at it. So it's about looking at the stories in these narratives and taking advantage of the opportunity that it presents to talk to your kids. Don't let the show do all the work. Your kids might not draw the conclusions you want them to draw. But if you can take advantage of that narrative and teach your kids and help them get to the place that they learn and internalize things, it can be an incredibly effective tool.
And you bring up such a good point, that talking piece, because if your kids are used to talking to you about what they see in their programming, that's easily transferred to them, hopefully talking to you about what they see online. And we want to keep that conversation open, that line of conversation open, because when they encounter those tough things online, we're not going to see it largely.
Well, you know, and the talking is so important, CJ, that's such a great point, because what a parent sees is not the same thing as a kid sees. I remember, Diana, you told me a story about one of your daughters who had been washing off the roof in her bikini, and she was trying to figure out if it was okay to post a picture of herself in a bathing suit online. And I thought that, first of all, that you've done a wonderful job that they stop and think, but that as a parent, you might be looking at that and going, oh my God, she's in a bathing suit. And as the kid, you're thinking, isn't this funny? I'm standing here in a pile of leaves with a hose. So when kids watch TV shows, it's really important to ask them questions before you start going right to the lesson, right? Don't close their ears off. What do you like about this show? Did you think that was funny? What was the funny part? You know, what do you think that guy should do? You know, what would you do? So that you're really bringing them into the narrative before you start making sense out of whatever the lesson is, because you need to know what they're seeing and how they're making meaning out of it.
Thank you for bringing it up. Absolutely. So asking questions, there was kind of some studies done around like Batman and superheroes and violence and things like that. Because kids will naturally exhibit modeling behavior. They'll do the thing that they see on. And this idea that Batman stands for justice, right, is kind of an abstract thing. It's this justice is in general is kind of this abstract concept that, you know, young kids might not be able to get. So asking your kids what they get from these kind of maybe potentially more violent superhero kick and punch kind of shows, what they get out of it. Do they understand that the bad guy received consequences and where that narrative took and A plus B equals C, asking them to ensure that they actually get the narrative fully and they don't just see punching, kicking, and it ends there. That's absolutely.
Yeah. And I noticed, I think this was you, Pam, put some notes in here about books. We can't forget that kids also still read, right?
That's right.
And I think this was you that put some notes in here about books that can teach reliance. Could you share those with us?
Yeah. And, you know, there's more and more all the time. And the great thing about books is that, especially little kids, but, you know, up until, I mean, my kids sat with me to read until my daughter told me I read slower than she could. But, you know, maybe 10, that they love to sit and read with you. So there's some, The Hugging Tree, and, you know, this, My Super Me and Bounce Back Betty, all of these kinds of things. I love the one, Spaghetti and a Hot Dog Bun, that talks about being different. Mm-hmm. All of these books are meant to be humorous. They're great little stories, and they allow you to have these conversations without having the conversation. And you're making all this body contact, and it's this wonderful experience, which not only teaches them a lesson about resilience, but lets them think about a different way of interacting with media, a different kind of media. It's not a screen, but it's very physical and interactive. So I think that that can be very, very powerful.
I love that. And, you know, also we cannot forget that kids spend a lot of time gaming. They spend a ton of time on YouTube. According to the research, 95% of kids say that they're on YouTube almost constantly, which I'm still trying to wonder how they're able to do that when they're in school. So they're learning things from these places too. And I mean, YouTube's a great example. I hear this all the time from the students I teach. If they want to learn how to do something, there's no stopping them. They will go to YouTube and find a video that will teach them how to do it. So that self-efficacy, knowing how to turn to the internet to learn how to do something that's going to make them better. I think we so overlook that as adults, that's the way that kids are largely using their media today. Video games, that's another really good example. There's so many games where kids have to, you know, do better, level up, you know, get up from your defeat and start over and learn how to be resilient or build something on Minecraft that's better than what you built yesterday and blah, blah, you know, so many great opportunities. Can you guys think of any other ways?
Well, I mean, one of the ways is that this sort of building and creativity is rewarded, but what I wanted to point out is we've worried a lot about our kids' self-esteem. You know, do they think well of themselves? You know, well, you can't tell them they didn't do something right because it might damage their self-esteem. And there's a whole other, you know, argument and problems with that. But I don't know one kid whose self-esteem was damaged by needing to start a level over in a video game, right? They understand what happened. They got feedback, they practice, they get better, they level up. So it's really important to remember that competence is a much more important determinant of self-esteem than just, you know, loving you just the way you are, like, you know, Mr. Rogers, who was very cool. I just want to be fair. But it needs, self-esteem has to have substance. And that's surprisingly what happens in a lot of these games where they're collaborating, they're strategizing. My daughter has the most amazing negotiator trading God only knows what on Roblox, mysterious animals and unicorns and all these things. She's going to be an amazing investment banker someday because she's got all that negotiating skill down.
Yeah, those are really good points.
I will throw out there that thinking about my childhood growing up, some of the first memories that I have of trying to achieve something and it being really difficult and then having the victory of actually achieving it and the high that came with that moment was absolutely in Pokemon, the video game of Pokemon. It was really difficult and getting through it. I know it's kind of silly as adults to like look at that and be like, oh, that, but like that, it was, there's an absolute vivid like core memory in my head that has built my confidence that like I can do hard things. So it absolutely plays a role.
Yeah. So that goes right into, okay, so we've given examples of how you can use that online time to build resilience, but what are some things that families can do offline with their kids that can help build that resilience before they go online?
Well, let me just start with spending time with your kids. One of the most important determinants of resilience is a kid feeling like they have support. And so if they make a mistake and they feel like they can't handle it, they have someplace to go. Because what you're trying to, you don't expect them to handle everything, but you're trying to teach them that they can handle it, that it's okay to stumble and fall. That's how they learn to ride a bike. That's how you learn life, is that you have mistakes and you fix them. Another thing is just sort of these practicing interpersonal skills. When you hear a child calling themselves a name, oh, I'm so stupid. I mean, then have them practice self-compassion. You might want to find different words for that. Self-compassion sounds, you know, like they're going to run and hide, but be kind to yourself, because what you tell yourself matters. But more importantly, your child just labeled themselves. It wasn't like I had trouble with this game or I fell off my bike. They said, I'm stupid, which is a global quality. So be aware of the way they talk to themselves, be aware of the way you talk to yourself, so that you can start modeling these examples of understanding and compassion and problem solving.
That's really great. And this whole idea of it's okay to have mistakes happen and you practice it offline, it's okay to fall off your bike. But where it gets trickier is when you do move online, because, you know, the consequences of making a mistake online are a lot bigger than something offline. For one, it lives there online forever. For two, there's a lot of safety concerns. So it's harder for kids to practice this stuff. So I'm a big, as you guys know, big advocate of practicing online skills offline. So we're going to kind of give you some examples of how we do that within the cyber civics curriculum and how you might extrapolate from this and do it with your own kids at home. And so I kind of broke this down by topic, and we can talk about too, CJ, and how maybe kids are learning about this from shows they watch. But so parents are really worried about cyberbullying. We know that most kids will at least observe cyberbullying sometime in their lifetime. Statistics are all over the place. This morning I read 63% of pupils witness bullying behavior in their school. That's online and offline. That means there's 63% of kids who could do something about it. And if one kid steps into a bullying situation, usually it will be resolved. So simple solution. We don't teach kids enough what to do when they see online bullying. So we do that in cyber civics. How do you be an upstander? Very easy. Step in and give comfort to the target. That's easy to do. Report it to the place where it happens. Pretty easy to do. Three, stand up to the bully. Harder to do, but some kids can do that. So CJ, can you think of examples of where cyberbullying is addressed in media?
Yeah, a lot of current kid shows that are being made right now will have an episode or two on it. I will recommend the Cartoon Network show, Craig of the Creek, which in general is phenomenal at teaching kids specific things. But they have an episode on cyberbullying and what to do in those moments to like step up and reach out to an adult and things like that. So I'll throw that one out there as a recommendation.
Okay, that's a good one. And Pam, as far as cyberbullying goes, like how would you prepare a kid offline to
One of the things that I would be thinking about, especially if my child were the target of a cyberbully, would be to talk with them a little bit about how that's making them feel, not just attacked, but generally these sort of trolls and bullies target something that's a real vulnerability. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not, you know, a good enough baseball player, whatever it is, so that you understand the underlying anxiety that is being triggered by the cyberbullying, so that you can address that while you're teaching them skills to stand up to the bully. So that's where, and then you would start with the role playing. Well, what are ways that you can solve this? Okay, you know, what would you say to someone who saw who did that to you? How would you get support? And just make them sort of talk out loud, because it creates a pattern in their brain so that they have a resource. So if it does happen, they go, oh, I know what to do. I talked about this with my mom, and I, you know, go to the principal and I block them. And, you know, I remember it's about them, not about me. And so they go through the little list in their head because they've had a chance to do that with you or with CyberCivics, where they've had a chance to really put feet on the ground.
Yeah. And that's why we give them a little, really something simple to remember if they're the target. Stop, block, talk. Who can't remember that, right? So you stop by unfollow, turn off the communication. I mean, I'm sorry, take stock. I screwed that up already. I haven't taught that since last spring. Take stock. And this is an important one. I'm glad that I screwed up because I can really underscore it. When cyberbullying happens, it's important for kids to record it. So very easy to do that by taking a screenshot of the evidence, because you want to save it to show it to a trusted adult or to the network where it happens. Then stop. And that means to cut off communication. And then finally talk. And that's going to a trusted adult, to the network where it happens, to a parent, somebody that you can tell them what's happening online. So just giving kids these little things they can remember, hopefully they remember better than I do, is so helpful if they encounter, and they will, these challenges online. So I wanted to...
When they succeed, you're building their resilience. So don't just automatically go, oh my God, they're having a problem. This is a terrible thing. A lot of problems are really good opportunities to help a child get stronger.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, you know, when I teach, I'm always astounded that whenever I go into a classroom, whatever the topic of the day is, it's so easy to like, hey, what's going on? And the topic will be something that's happened that week. I mean, it is, you know, it happens every week because these kids are dealing with the stuff 24/7. So there's so much stuff that they think is cyberbullying, and it's really digital drama, which is just the everyday things that kids deal with that have moved online. And I think this is the most important thing to help kids with, is the drama. And I think, you know, the stuff that CJ talks about, watching it and seeing other people deal with it, is a huge way to build resilience. But more importantly, talk about these things with the kids. Every kid will experience this. Every kid will be left out of a sleepover or not invited to a party, and they will see it online and it will feel hurtful to them. So this is the stuff, you know, role play it with them. Talk about the reasons why, you know, maybe the mom only had this big of a living room. I mean, there's so many things that you can address ahead of time to help the kids prepare for what's going to inevitably happen online.
Yeah, be sure to validate their feelings. Don't tell them, oh, you don't have to worry about that, or you shouldn't feel bad about that. They do feel bad about that. So don't deny their feelings, because that makes them feel guilty for having those feelings. What you want is like, boy, I bet that feels bad. You know, what can we do to make it feel better? So that they're thinking about it in a positive frame and they're moving forward and they're proactive. Being able to manage negative emotions is not most related to depression. It's most related to proactive problem solving to deal with them. It's denial that causes things like depression and anxiety and all of those negative consequences.
Right. And I just want to point out, you know, you've all heard the research from the World Health Organization that we're experiencing a mental health crisis with kids. So more than ever, we need to teach the self-efficacy, because the things that are making them depressed, it's not their social media, it's the things they see on their social media. I mean, our world has a lot of things right now going on, and kids are seeing that. So we need to prepare them to be resilient against all of this stuff. And, you know, hopefully by practicing these things that we share with you, they can learn those skills. I wanted to talk to, this is something, and I hope it fits here, but I think it's important. You know, what's more predominant than cyberbullying in schools is online hate speech. So this is something to really talk to your kids about, especially if your kids are part of an outgroup. What I learned about this is that when you are the target of online hate speech, you are not the target. It's the group you belong to. So maybe you're Muslim, maybe you're, you know, you're not sure of your gender. All these things that make you a tiny bit different can also ramp up the chance that you might be the target of hate speech. So talking to your kids about that, I think media does a great job these days of preparing kids for this possibility by having different, finally, different representation. And you have an example of that, CJ?
Well, I have kind of a current example of how media can actually bring on the hate speech, and which is the current Little Mermaid. I don't know if you two are aware of it, but there was a Little Mermaid. They were making a live action Little Mermaid movie, and who they cast as Ariel is black, and boy oh boy has it received some hate. But it's interesting because it's an opportunity. There are a bunch of clips of little black girls in almost tears watching this trailer. And their reactions of like, oh my gosh, that's me. I think you can kind of use those as the right, you know, show those to your kids, and like, don't shield them from this kind of stuff, because it does happen. You can use that kind of, again, as an opportunity to walk them through. I think it can be helpful that if maybe it is kind of at first detached from themselves, and they can kind of see it outside of themselves, so that when it does happen to them, they're aware of it, and you've hopefully kind of taught them some skills to kind of work through it.
That's a great example.
And you've been developing empathy. Another example, Diana, is Ms. Marvel, who is the new Marvel series of a young girl who comes from a Muslim family. So the other thing that's making a big difference, and I'm not sure if it's showing up in children's programming, CJ, but is, you know, this scramble for content. There are so many different cultures and, you know, points of origin of the shows that are coming into Netflix and Prime and all that, that there's the representation of culture is extraordinary. And it wasn't really intentional to creating diversity. It was just a byproduct of seeking content.
Yeah. And the element of kind of hitting audiences that they haven't been able to capture before, they are naturally creating kind of more diverse content. I'll say some of the best, no question, some of the best content is international content. South Korea makes some incredible content. Just throwing that out there for everybody.
You know, the other thing we have not talked about, but I think it's probably something that requires resilience more than anything online right now, is resilience against misinformation. Kids are getting their news from their social networks, as are adults, and it's really hard to tell truth from fiction. So making sure that your kids are resilient by teaching them what to do should they encounter something online that seems questionable. Very simple. When we teach these lessons, we use what's been advised by the Stanford Education History Group. And they say to ask three questions. This is what real fact checkers do: to ask yourself, who is behind the information? What is the evidence for the claims? And what do others say about the author or the source? And we practice this again and again in the classroom, but you can do this at home with your kids. You know, go through your social media networks with them by your side, and you come across a news article that seems questionable to you. Ask, who's the author? What's their evidence? What do others say about this author? It will take you 60 seconds to do that, thanks to Google. And your kids learn a very, very valuable resiliency skill against misinformation.
You know, I might add a question to your list, because a lot of what we're seeing now is this sort of, you know, bubble factions is, what group identity are they creating? Yes. you know, because especially young people who are trying to figure out who they are often very vulnerable to pressures that, or the allure of being part of something. So understanding that it's an actual group and they're being manipulated then is a great protector, because no kid likes to be manipulated by other people.
Yeah.
And that will oversight, you know, step over the, you know, the appeal of the group.
Yeah. You know, this is almost a whole nother podcast, honestly. That's such an important thing right now, especially, you know, powerful algorithms. YouTube is one of the best. You know, kids will be interested in a topic or curious about a topic, and they'll watch one video and they'll get 20 more on the same topic and fall down a rabbit hole. And a lot of times bored kids, bored adults even, will all of a sudden find an affinity group that they may never have been thought of part of before. So there is something parents can do about that. And when your child has a YouTube account, you can look at their watch history. I'm not a big one for spying on kids, but this might be something that's worth doing. If your child isn't willing to talk to you about what they're watching, you can find out, because it's important to know, because if they're falling down a rabbit hole, you want to make sure that they're seeing both sides of whatever the information is that they're searching for. The last thing I have on here is sexting. So let's talk about that for a second, Pam. We've talked about that offline. So who is more likely to respond to a ask for a nude, which is what
someone who wants to be loved, right? So we were talking about building self-efficacy and self-empowerment and the ability to feel, you know, like you're okay by yourself will make kids much less vulnerable and much more able to exercise critical thinking when they get a request like that. Hopefully they're in a program like Cyber Civics where they're getting to hear about the implications, which can be very serious of sexting. That's one, as Diana will tell you, do not take a picture of that one.
Yeah.
But you really can protect your kids by working on resilience skills.
It's crazy to me that schools don't take the time. Some do. Thank you to those of you teaching cyber civics, but a lot of schools do not take the time to teach kids the stuff that's so important, because the consequences, possible consequences to them of what could happen are so big. So it's important to teach your kids. And we just barely touched the tip of the iceberg here. There are so many things, as you know, that can happen online. Practice their response, practice what they do, practice how they, you know, tell their friends or protect their friends. All of that stuff is just so super important. So time for our takeaways today. CJ, I'll start with you, put you on the spot first. What would be your biggest takeaways to parents in regards to building resilience in their kids?
Can I actually take it back just a little bit? I know we're at time, but we did have one question that I think is really interesting.
I got notes everywhere and I forgot to look at the questions. I apologize.
Which is, can you address if a parent learns that their kid is writing and sharing hate speech? If their kid is writing and sharing hate speech.
Okay, wait a second. I get it. Can you address if a parent learns? Ooh, that's a good one. Okay, so talk. That's number one, talk. I mean, if they were in the classroom, they would have learned a lesson on, you know, what happens if you write that kind of hate speech, and somebody who sees it, how they can report it to the place where it happens. But if you know that this is your child, it's a time to have conversation about it and to explain that there are real people behind the screen and that those feelings can be hurt. And not only that, putting this stuff is against, if you go to the terms of use of almost any social media network, it is against their terms of use to engage in hate speech. So if they have not already been blocked or taken off, I mean, I'm surprised if it's Roblox, for example, they would be blocked so fast. They have very good ways of detecting this stuff, but not all social networks are that proactive. So explain to them that they're going to lose their privileges on social networks or wherever they're using hate speech if they're engaging in that, because it is against the terms of use of every network.
You know, that's what one of the things that makes your lessons in a classroom so powerful, because it's one thing for a parent to talk to a child and try and take them through that, which is super important. But when they're in a peer group and they see that reaction of other people to participating in hate speech, it really reinforces a much more positive social behavior, because they were doing that to be part of something. And it shifts the peer group to being part of something positive.
I have a question that I don't know how to answer here. We're working at home in my community to tackle creepy pasta in back rooms. Do you know what that is, Pam?
No.
Or CJ? So I'm going to have to get back to you on that one. But the end of it is, can you please tell a little bit about ideas and ways to introduce and work resilience and how to treat this topic with different age kids at home? So hopefully we've addressed that over this half hour. Again, it's talking, doing scenarios with them, letting them fail in real life because that's how they learn resilience. Perhaps those games we talked about earlier, letting them fail and get better. But you know what? Sit with them and do it with them. Because then you're going to understand what it is they like about these places and what they're learning instead of saying, turn it off all the time.
Yes, they will be delighted to beat you as well.
Exactly. Or laugh at you when they see how lame you are. I have Roblox seriously on my desktop and I go to try to do it every so often and I am horrible. I'm like, I need a kid here to make me better. So, all right, back to our takeaways. CJ, did you get to give me a takeaway for today?
No, but it kind of transitions well from what we were just talking about, which is doing it with your kids. So I would say the takeaway is the more kind of involved that you are in what your kids are watching, the more you have an opportunity to use that media to teach them things. Like I think about, you know, I had a bracelet growing up that was WWJD, and whether you're religious or not, you know, what would Jesus do? You can, depending on your kid and what your kid is attached to, you can kind of swap that out and it will work. My dad actually used what would Superman do for me a lot of the times, like in a given situation. I loved Superman. And so I knew Superman. I knew what he would do. I had like a relationship with Superman. And so if I, you know, there was one time that I was bullying a kid in elementary and my dad used what would Superman do? And I thought about it and I realized that's not something Superman would do. And I want to be like Superman. Mm-hmm. So the more involved you are with your kids and the, you know, the better, you know, the characters that they love and you're watching the things that they're watching, the more you can use it as a tool to help build resilience and teach life lessons.
I was laughing because I have a kid in my class that she learned from her mom whenever she was going to go online to do anything, send an email, respond to a text message. Her mom taught her to say, what would my mom like looking at this? And I just think that's so smart to stop and think every time you post something and that will stop you. I mean, you wouldn't do hate speech, right? If you've had that thought in your head.
Right.
So I think I'm going to use her tip as my tip of the day. What would my mom think? Have your kids ask themselves that. Pam, how about you? What's your tip of the day?
Okay, so I agree with both of you, but remember that when a child runs into trouble, they're in some kind of pain, they're suffering. Make sure you validate that you don't deny it, so that they get used to managing that and knowing they're gonna survive. So instead of saying, oh, you don't feel that way, say, gosh, that must hurt. Why don't we try breathing deeply? Why don't we take a walk? Why don't we do these things that really shift your body chemistry so that we can then find a solution for making you feel better over the longer term or solve this problem? But don't be the fix it, be the catalyst.
Yeah, that's a great tip. I'm going to throw this out there because it might be useful to those of you who are with us today. One of our lessons on online safety has about, I think 15 to 20 scenarios in it that I read to students, and it has a little cheat thing for the teachers to give them the right answer, but there are things that kids will encounter online. It's great doing this in a group because the kids discuss it and they all have examples of things that have happened to them like it. But I'm happy to send you that lesson to do at home with your own children. Just contact me directly at support@cybercivics.com and we will be more than happy to send you that lesson. So. All right. Okay. Thank you guys. This was a great conversation today, an important one. So hopefully it will live on in online life. I'm so excited about next time. Okay. Pam, you can look up the date while I'm telling what it is. We're going to have
the hard question.
Two authors of a brand new book, Emily Weinstein and Carrie James, wrote a really good book. I've just dove into it. And it's an important book right now because it's what kids are really doing online. So the book is called Behind Their Screens, What Teens Are Facing and What Parents Are Missing. So important, or what adults are missing. I'm sorry. So I'm so excited to hear what they have to say. Pam, were you able to find the date?
Yes, October 18th at 12 noon.
So we're going back to Tuesdays, Tech Talk Tuesdays. So that's a Tuesday, noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So that'll be a good do not miss episode. So, all right. Thank you both. And thank you for those of you who are watching or listening. Good luck with your own kids. And do reach out to me if you want that lesson. Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.